Hey, this is Victims of Circumstance, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hi there. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. We are a show that likes to bring to you guests weekly and talk about life. I am Scott. That is Mike. Mike, how are you?
Salutations.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, episode 274, Mike, crawling our way to 300, where we could finally wrap this thing up and call it quits. So, 26 episodes left to go, and the fans are very happy about it. They're very happy. They're waiting for the end, where we freeze ourselves, we put Verbal Shenanigans on ice, as last week, and we just... wait till the future when someone unfreezes us and our audio, and it's like, wow, we really missed out the first time. Let's unfreeze these guys.
Yeah, I feel most of our downloads are just people who fast forward to the last 8 minutes to see if we say, and that's it. It's all done.
They wait to hear signing off for the last time, guys. Mm-hmm. I'm Scott. That's Mike. We're out. And then they see the episode come across their phone the next week. They're like, God damn it.
Ah, we got you.
So, anyway, like I said, guys, we are, if you're just tuning in, we are a weekly podcast. I know there's many podcasts out there, but there's only one like ours. but we do try to bring you interesting guests. Last week we had a guy from the Cryonics Institute, which is why we're talking about freezing ourselves. It wasn't just randomly talking. But I guess, Mike, the only way to jump in is it would be very remiss if we didn't talk about what happened with Kobe Bryant over the weekend. I guess on Sunday. I guess leading up to it, it's kind of crazy because a couple things had happened in kind of our podcast world that kind of made me – it was weird how the sequence of events happened. So a couple weeks ago, I believe, was that
two episodes ago.
We had Aaron Fitzgerald on. And if you go back to the episode, Aaron Fitzgerald is a stunt helicopter pilot, basically, but also does all these films and, you know, he does insane things. Now, we had him on. That guy worked with Kirby Chambliss, who is a Red Bull Air Race pilot, who we've had on twice, and we're scheduled to have on in a couple weeks. We'll see if that happens. He's supposed to come back on, I think, for the third time. And...
correct.
So before any of the Kobe Bryant stuff happened, we see on Kirby Chambliss's Instagram or and Twitter and whatnot that there had been an accident. It was kind of like a little bit of a vague post, like there was an accident today at the trials or the practice or whatever it was for an event, and Kirby is fine, and it didn't really give too much info unless you really kind of Googled it a little bit, started to dive into it. So what had happened, long story short, not to really go deeply into it, I guess someone from his team or an associate or whatever was flying his aircraft, the Red Bull aircraft, and it crashed, and it killed the two bystanders for sure, and then the pilot himself. So like me and Mike on Saturday were kind of sending things back and forth that we found. I had to go to Twitter to kind of really see what was confirmed. So that was like a really sad story, and we're thinking, like, you know, Kirby's one of my favorite guys we've talked to on this cast. The interviews are always like super enjoyable, real unique, and I just think he's a cool guy to talk to. So he had the thing. So we're the all of Saturday, we're like, oh, damn, you know, that's terrible. And there's like video of it from bystanders and brutal story. And what was it, Guatemala it happened? Or
it was in Guatemala, yeah. It was basically a, I think it was like a test run or something to that effect before the stunt show was going to happen later that weekend. And when the tragedy occurred,
yeah.
For best I can tell, they were doing something for like a VIP group for this. Don't quote me 100%, but I think that's why they were playing, trying things out and getting ready for the show when the tragedy happened. It was really brutal stuff. And I highly recommend, do, as weird as this sounds, I highly recommend do not go on the internet to look for the videos, because we came across one. It's
not pleasant.
Very sad and horrific, and you gain absolutely nothing by seeing that.
Yeah, so that like kind of bummed me out, and also like reading. Side note: reading that the Red Bull Air Race is done, so that's coming to an end too, which I thought was. I really did think it was a sport that was growing, because I mean, if you watch the. If you watch the broadcast, the way they were broadcasting, I thought it was fascinating. Like, one day I actually, like, we interview these guys, but, like say we interview a Red Bull diver. It's not like I'm out watching diving every week. But a couple times I saw it on TV, I'd look if Kirby was on, and then I'd get sucked into it for a while. Because the way they did the time trials and broadcast it with, like, you'd see the ghost of the other plane, and you'd see, like, if they were ahead of them or whatnot. It was really interesting. It was pretty high-quality production. It wasn't like... It never appeared like it was going to be going out of business. So like, it looked like a sport that was growing, and generally racing, there's a lot of money in racing of any kind.
Yeah, a lot of knowledge in it. Like you said, they were still going to these unique locations to do these events. It wasn't like, oh, we're in Iowa and then next week, North Dakota. Yeah. It was literally they were traveling around the world. They had multiple rounds, they had commentary, they had production, everything said, okay, Red Bull and the networks are doubling down on these events. But
it certainly seemed like I thought it was going to be a sport that like would catch on to people who are into like, I don't know, I think of like F1 and stuff like that, where there's a little money in the sport. Yeah. It's a very high focus and skill and team and... But you think about that, and you think about how much money there has to just be to get these planes going and have a team and pay a team, and so that was interesting. So from the helicopter pilot to Kirby's team having a crash, and then Sunday morning, I was actually working play by play for a hockey tournament, which I hadn't done in a while, which is fun. It's like for me, it's like stretching a muscle that like you get to use every once in a while. I've done it. This is my third time only doing it, so. It's fun, hard. When you're calling hockey, it's like you don't realize how skilled these guys are and how sharp you just have to be at all times. There's no like you can't take off for a couple seconds because then it's just dead air. It's weird, you know, like it just sounds weird. So it's like constantly describing what's going on at all times. But it is something I really enjoy and hope to do again. But anyway, so. I get a message. I'm like, and someone's like, Kobe Bryant died. I'm like, what? You know, like Kobe Bryant. And then, as you know, everybody knows at this point, like crash happened, and you know, it's like one of those text messages, like, or like the size of the person, the notoriety of the person is so big that you're just like, no way. Like they're almost one of those. This is the equivalent of like a Shaq, a Derek Jeter. A Tom Brady, someone so well known in the sports world that's like this iconic level that kids that never even saw the guy know their names. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I was trying to think of a comparison to what happened there. The two that come to mind of like utter shock when it happened, one would be Dale Earnhardt.
That's who I was. That was the closest I could think of.
And the other one I could think of is Sean Taylor.
Sean Taylor.
Now, he wasn't at the Redskins. He wasn't at, like, superstar, everybody in the world knows him level, but it was still one of those
Yeah.
Whoa, what just happened here kind of moments.
Yeah, even like Roy Holiday, you know, like that was pretty epically tragic. And I feel like that didn't get that got a lot of press, but like it's not even nipping at the heels of the level of like what a superstar or what a, you know, at the dinner table, everybody knows who Kobe Bryant is, you know?
And not only like an icon, but a universal icon. Mm-hmm. You could go to China. You can go to Europe. You can go to India, say Kobe Bryant.
Yep.
And you got a good chance of somebody going, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first reaction is obviously, you know, you're sad. You just try to get like the information and whatnot. And then, you know, as the story unfolds, it was like one of those stories that just got sadder and sadder and sadder and sadder. You know, you find out his kids are on board. You find out there's another kid on board. There's a family on board. You know, once you start seeing all the people that died, it's just, it's a weird feeling. Like, it's a weird feeling. Like, usually you don't, you know, a lot of times a celebrity dies and you're like, eh, you know, that's sad, but you almost feel like it's their time or whatnot. But I don't know, something about this story, like, I don't know, really, I feel like it affected, like, everybody. Like, the general public, that's all you hear, that's all you see on Facebook, that's all you see on the news, that's all you see in the Grammys, that's all you see on people who don't even watch sports are posting about it. It's a pretty interesting reaction.
Yeah, it was a surreal kind of thing. Like, I remember... I was doing a bunch of stuff around the house, and I went into the bedroom, and my wife is like, hey, I think Kobe's dead. And I'm like, well, where are you getting this from? And first she says Facebook, and I'm like, oh, that's not a good source. There's so many total trolls out there who'll just put something out there and make it look like a real site and whatever.
Yeah.
And it was kind of weird for like the longest time. Like, even you texted me, I'm like, I'm on CNN, I'm on ESPN, they're not calling it.
Yeah.
And it was weird how, like, some others officially called it before other networks did. I mean, I kind of applaud the ones that waited to the last minute, because, number one, I heard TMZ literally broke it without the family knowing.
Yeah, I heard that, too.
What happened, which is...
I believe it, too.
It's an utterly disgusting thing. I still don't get to this day. Like, I understand the 1970s or whatever, where if you're the first one to break it, like, everybody's going to go to you and like, oh, that's my news coverage, because they find something, I get knowledge right off the bat versus these other guys. I don't know one story where it's like, well, since you broke it, I'm going to be watching you from now on. You know what I mean? It doesn't have the grandeur of what it used to be when there was a couple of networks and it's like, all right, we got to get up there. Now it's like, you're literally pointing out there. We've seen cases where they had to turn around and change it. Hell, I remember we were doing this podcast when Tom Petty died.
Yeah.
And then 20 minutes later, you're like, wait, he's alive. Yeah. Then, like, an hour later, he was dead, and it was like a weird. You were still sitting back, like, well, what the heck is it? You know? Yeah. So that was really an awkward item and all. Another thing I've come to see, I guess it's with all of our social commentary, nobody can go out there and say anything.
Nope.
Now, I mean, from that, like, when the initial shock, when we're all sad, we're all coming together, it's depressing, but almost feel good in the sense everybody's joining, like, oh, let's mourn together. And then literally maybe like 15 minutes after that, I start seeing comedians crying about, oh, don't be getting mad at me because I did a Kobe joke. If this was like one guy put it there, Trump died, you guys would have a field day telling jokes. Somewhat true. I'll give that person credit. The person I'm giving credit for, I don't give a lot of credit for, I understand the point. And then there was all of a sudden a huge backlash on, well, he was considered a rapist, or he was accused of being a rapist.
Yep.
So ergo, stop, you know, thinking he's an angel or something like that. That one I'm kind of on the fence on, because I'm like, my wife kind of looked up some stuff on the story, and I try to read up on stuff, and it's like this weird in the middle where it's like he, for what I understand, like he didn't understand she wasn't giving consent, but then there was also other evidence and stuff like that. And I'm not saying this to say, okay, we can't say he was one. It's a good possibility, but it's just,
yeah,
I don't know. It's like a weird spot where, like, I don't know who, what can happen where we could just sit back and go, all right, let's keep the opinions out for like a week.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, right? Like 25 years ago, 20 years ago, there was no, you know, you had your opinions with, you mean you would chat over the phone or at the bar or in our house. And that opinion, it was amongst our conversation, and that was it. It was with the people at work by the water cooler, quote unquote, you had to talk with. Oh, I don't think this happened. Now it's like people feel obligated to post exactly what they think, not only just on their own walls and social media. They feel the need to go to other people's things and post what they think and their opinion and whatnot. So, like, I got two opinions. I mean, you are, if you are a comic and you want to attempt a joke, that's your right to attempt it, but it's, you have to, most likely it's not going to be a good joke. There's not a lot that you could really pull from this. And two, if not, just stand by your joke and don't say anything. Like, don't get involved. Just stand by it and be like, okay, I made it. I'm going to take the backlash. You are allowed to say whatever you want. And that's what I'll always defend. Like, hey, you could, your choice is yours. You're allowed to say it. I mean, what people think of you afterwards, or if they hate your joke or whatnot, that's the risk you take. That's the gamble you take with posting something like that. So I don't really, but again, a lot of these comics, they post their joke and then they get mad that people are mad at them. Well, you posted that to get a reaction. You didn't post it to, that is what your goal was to get some kind of reaction. Was it the reaction you wanted? Did you want everybody going, that's the greatest joke? No, you knew you were going to get backlash. So anyone who posted something controversial, you're bringing that onto yourself. So I hate the people who are pretending that, oh, you big pansies, you didn't. Well, you poked the bear. You knew what was coming. You knew that backlash was coming to you when you posted that.
However, when you're doing a joke an hour after it's breaking, you're on, especially when you know it's going to hit the heart of some people, you're going to be on a little thin ice.
Exactly.
You just got to kind of own it. And by the way, the winner of the quickest joke after the death will go to Ken Kranz, who put up, I never thought Magic Johnson would outlive Kobe Bryant.
Good for
you, Ken Kranz.
It was clever.
See him on Tap House sometime in 2020.
It was clever. I mean, look, I've done a million jokes of when someone died and try to find something. A lot of people do. Mm-hmm. This one felt a little different because, I guess, of the size of the star and the fact that it wasn't just him, you know. It was his daughter. And you see, I don't know, man. You got no heart if you're looking at these pictures of the two of them courtside and seeing them together, and you just see that relationship of father and daughter, and you think about them going down in a helicopter together, like those final moments. It's an awful thought, you know, an awful thought to think that, you know, the their mother is going to go on without their husband and daughter, you know, among the rest of the family. Mm-hmm. Just those thoughts, you have to be inhuman to not have some feelings towards that, no matter what you thought of Kobe, you know, as a person. And if he is guilty of what he did, obviously he's not the greatest person, but it's still a whole bunch of lives lost. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, not like I've researched his relationship with his other daughters, but like I hear, like he was bought the name Mamba Sita because it seemed, because it seemed like she was the one that was going to carry on the name. He had no boys. Yeah. He was considered like a really good basketball player. I mean, even like UConn made a special jersey with her name on it and left it on an empty seat in honor of her last night. I mean,
So you got to take Kobe's, you know, checkered past, if you will, out of it. You know, you can't take that out on the girl, you know, or the kids or the other kids that died in this crash. It's a tragic story, and I hate both sides of it because I hate that people are like, there's people like, oh, get over it. Kobe was like, why are you poking fun of people like having emotions about someone dying? Like, are we supposed to be like, yeah, no big deal, whatever, to everything? Is that how we're supposed to be? To everything? Like, I don't usually get wrecked over celebrity deaths. This one bothered me. Do I have to give you a reason? Do I need to justify to strangers that I'm upset? Or I remember when we were on the podcast, you brought up Tom Petty bothered me because I really wanted to see him. I was a big fan. I was like, oh man, that really sucks. Am I sitting home crying? No, but you're allowed to, you know. And some people are just more sensitive than others, you know. And like, you're going to tell people with kids that they're not supposed to feel a certain way. I just don't like that. Like, oh, first it's either, oh, I can make jokes, or, oh, if you make a joke, you're terrible. There's no rules. It's just whatever you put out there in social media land or whatever, you are open to criticism from either direction. So it's like, I don't know. There's no, I don't think anybody could tell you don't do this or don't do that. Like, hey, you go for the joke, fine. You deal with what comes back to you. Mm-hmm. Hey, you want to voice your opinion? You're going to get, no matter what today, you're going to get people that say, oh, well, he was this, he was that. There's two sides to everything. The tragedy is that a bunch of young people, Kobe, everyone, lost their lives in a freaking helicopter crash. That's tragic.
Yeah, and the other thing I felt bad for, talk about the coverage from that day. I remember I turned on the NBA Network trying to get some more details, and they were talking to, like, I think it was a firefighter chief, and this press were badgering him questions like, why weren't you up at the helicopter faster? Why did it take so long? Why don't you have details? And the guy's literally, as professionally as humanly possible, trying to tell people, it's a crime scene. We tried to get up there as fast as we can. Sadly, they crashed into a mountain. It's not like in the middle of the road so people can get out of their cars and run over and help them. They're on halfway up a mountain, so you can't just drive up there. You got to have a whole excursion and tape it off and stuff like that. I mean,
as if it would have mattered, man. I can't imagine anybody had any chance of living, you know, in a accident like that.
I mean, for what I heard, they don't have black boxes on they don't need to. They had an iPad, as generally, because it's just not a law. And their last log was 1 minute before the crash, where he said he was going to a higher level because of the fog or a cloud, something like that. And then literally like 1 minute later, it fell to the earth. And I don't know what to think. And also,
they were saying, I was hearing on the radio today that apparently they got special clearance to fly in that weather, which I don't know. Maybe this is a case where being a powerful, rich celebrity actually hurt. You know, like if everybody else couldn't take off, you know, and everything else was grounded and he was able to take off to try to get to somewhere. I don't know. I don't know if that's the complete truth either. That's just what I heard on a radio show. So I don't know.
I kind of heard the same thing. I mean, it kind of adds to it. Like, I've talked to many people where they said, like, I don't mind flying. I would never go in a helicopter because, I mean, it's kind of like one of the questions I asked Aaron. It's like, it just, for lack of a better term, it's a lead balloon. And if something goes wrong, at least with like a plane, you have wings where it's like you can somewhat glide. There are some technical ways where you can put yourself in a situation where you can do like even an emergency landing, landed better, as we saw with Sully.
Yeah,
but like, helicopters, it just seemed like if it's going down, you probably got to one in a million shot of correcting it and getting back up there, you know?
Yeah, so. But, you know, like, on the other hand, how many helicopter crashes are there? Not a lot, you know what I mean? Like, they're being used every day, all the time. Same thing with planes, you know? The millions and millions and millions of people that fly every day, you know, and then a plane crash happens. But meanwhile, we'll get in our car and drive down the highway, and there's tens of thousands of accidents and deadly accidents every day. But we don't pay any attention to them. So
no, and when you're used to it and it doesn't happen, you don't blink an eye. They said literally that's how Kobe always traveled. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Los Angeles and the traffic, you can't really blame him. No. He's got the money.
No. All I was thinking was like, oh God, Bill Burr, please stop flying helicopter. Like, cause he's into flying helicopters. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh God. But even he was talking about it. He's like, you're trained to do this. The helicopter, you know, you never hear about a helicopter accident. You only hear when it happens, the once or twice every couple years or whatever the hell it is. He's like, you know, you go on that highway going 80 miles per hour. You're inches away from every car. You're basically like, what do you call it, the Blue Angels? You're basically in formation. Mm-hmm. You know, like trusting other drivers. Like, so I don't know, but overall, it's just a, you know, it sucks. It sucks. I think. It's amazing that even like a death like this can still bring out like a lot of ugly in people. It still, you know, it still turns people against each other. It just, no matter what, every issue turns everybody into some kind of battle. It's just annoying at this point. But
yeah, it's almost like now when we get into these things, it's like, all right, we're shutting down the internet for 20 minutes. Everybody be cool.
Yeah.
Talk in your corner. Hash things out. We're going to turn the internet back on at about 11:30. Hopefully you calm down.
Yeah. But, you know, life goes on and, you know, prayers go out to the families and whatnot, but it sucks all around. But I guess this is a hard transition to our guest tonight.
Group.
The only thing I could think of is, you know, they bring a happy vibe to things, you know. They bring they play a happy type of music. They play ska music. Okay, I went through a ska phase when I was a kid. I did the whole go to concerts and dancing, skanking at shows and whatnot. And ska had a pretty big resurgence there, where it was like Real Big Fish and the Boss Tones and Less Than Jake and all those bands. So we're talking to a whole band tonight, which is different from, we did this one time, right? We had Steven Seagal. Which, by the way, if you guys never heard Steven Seagal, there, I still play them every time I host trivia or every time I have a comedy show. I always throw them into the mix, and I at least 10 times people have come, who is this? Like, who is covering this song? You know, go check them out. They're awesome. But tonight we have a band on the show called Victims of Circumstance. They've toured with the Boss Tones before. They've been around for decades at this point. And they just have a lot of experience. They're putting out a new album. They make some fun music to play to, drive to, listen to. So let's give all the guys a call. So this is Victims of Circumstance.
Let's do it.
We'll get into that in a minute. So, guys, first off, I want to thank the five of you for joining the show and giving us a few minutes of your time. So we were just talking right before we had you on. I think anybody who's kind of been in punk rock or I don't know if you call it underground music or whatnot, has kind of gone through a ska period in their life, whether it's, you know, back to the roots of ska or through the late 90s with the Boss Tones and Real Big Fit. And you're able to kind of see, you always see revivals of kind of ska going on or people stick to it and you have your fans. Now, you guys are, you know, you're coming on your fifth album. You've been together for quite a long time. Are you guys all from a background of ska music? Did you guys grow up on it, or did you find each other with like a mutual interest and you decided to play ska and punk? Where did you guys, tell us your origin story, if you will.
Actually, this is Glenn. Actually,
nobody really came from a ska background as far as playing. I enjoyed ska, well, I loved ska and was listening to it, but most of us were more of a punk rock
right
kind of background originally, and then I was really heavy into ska in the 90s, and then pretty much kind of talked Mike, our guitar player and singer, into just conned him into playing some ska riffs to see how it would sound, and from then on it was just like, all right, ska and punk together, it sounds great. that's what we're gonna do.
I would have never been in a ska band, but like, that's what he wanted to do, so that's what we did.
Yeah.
And no one wanted to punch it. Yeah. I really, literally, like, I liked it. I knew the hits. I knew the Boston's. I knew Goldfinger, but I wasn't steeped in it. But
right.
I'm more of a kind of a grunge guy or just, like, straight punk guy.
Mike would still rather us be a Pearl Jam cover band. Yeah.
Well, wait till you make that announcement about your new album in a few minutes.
We'd probably be more popular than we are now.
I mean, that,
it's Jeremy with trumpet.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Yeah. Jeremy is broken.
Give
us
ideas.
Yeah, we're running with that.
Write that down.
So you guys form a ska band. You come together. You decide that is the way to go. I have to imagine forming a band, a ska band, is really nothing until you get that sax and trumpet or trombone. You get that horn section. So I guess this question's more for Jason and Devin. How did you guys enter the band? Like, how were you approached? And were you guys, were you jazz players? Were you kids who were, like, in the school band, saxophone, trumpet? How did you enter the band as far as the dynamic?
Should the rest of the band leave while they answer?
Yes, please.
Leave yes. Get out of here.
It's like the newlywed game where we're going to ask them a question and then they're going to have to guess the answer.
Yeah. We're talking about Whoopi. The fun part is that you just acknowledge that the first 2 years of their existence was meaningless without
you picked up on that. We talked beforehand, yeah, so absolutely. You know.
I had stopped playing saxophone for a long time out of high school and wanted to start. And you do what you always do when you want to join a band. You go look at the personals on Craigslist. and a band was advertising for a trumpet or sax player. Right. And I reached out to them and went up there and rehearsed with them. And come to find out, Mike, his brother's my best friend.
Okay.
And I didn't know I was coming to try out for this band, and then the trombone player at the time, I went to high school with him, and I didn't realize that he was in this band either. So that was in 2008, and then what's Devin's origin story?
Yeah, it was a little strange. I was in a pretty, you know, unpopular band called H1N1, and that band
pretty unpopular
at one point.
Do not YouTube that name to anybody. Yeah. Do not YouTube it.
Yeah. But yeah, so I got a message from Jay one day because we have the guy Mike Plant, who was the drummer in that one specific band, but he knew the band was kind of like people were doing other things, people were moving away, all that. The band was, you know, kind of, it was
breaking up. I poached
him. Yeah. And so he was like, you know, you need to talk to this guy Jay. Like, he's like, they're looking for a trumpet player. I think he'd be great for it. And then, like, you know, before I could even message him, like, Jay messaged me and was like, hey, do you want to try this out? And so, you know, they gave me three songs. I learned them. I came in, played them, you know, a lot of antics and stuff, like funny pictures and all that. But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot like a Major League Baseball trade went down between two ska bands.
Yeah.
Except we didn't get
a
Europe.
The other band got a trombonist to be named later.
You just stole my joke. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, we pulled them into the band, and we're like, okay, you sound good. Next month, we're going to Europe. Are you ready?
I had to expedite my passport.
Yeah, it was
very expensive.
He had to sign a non-disclosure and, you know, pass the background check and everything else.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when you're forming the band and grabbing everybody together, is it like an instant chemistry? Did you guys have to, like, figure out a sound that you wanted, or was it just like right off the bat, okay, everything's gelling?
Well, I always kind of thought that going back to Devin,
we had been, you know, we had started in 2005 and we had gone through a couple different bass players and we, you know, had some horns here and there. In fact, Tim Burton from the Boss Tones played saxophone on our first album. And so we were kind of growing, but, you know, it was, I think when Devin came into the band, and because at that point we had sax and trombone, and Devin came into the band, and we actually had three horns for a month or two, but then we lost the trombone. But I always kind of thought when Devin came into the band, it was when we really hit our stride,
right,
and our sound really blew up, and we kind of finally fell into the groove of the sound we were looking for and wanted. And I mean, it's varied slightly since then. I mean, we're always growing and changing a little, but yeah, I think 2011 when Devin signed on was when we really shot through the roof there.
Yeah.
Put the nail down the line. But can I just add that a little bit too?
Yeah, add on.
Yeah, just like on the whole like chemistry thing, you know, I never, when I came into the band, I just felt like it clicked for me. And, you know, like, whereas like maybe you guys were going through other players, but like when I came in, I felt like these were the guys that I wanted to play with. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I hate to tell you, but you were the only one.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I mean, so like personally, you know, myself here, like I never really like felt that way. Like I was like, man, these are the guys I want to play with. And since then, it's been smooth sailing, you know. As far as I'm concerned, like
this lineup is the right lineup.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys realize this, but you know, it's so easy. Throw a stone and you hit a ska trumpet player. we had our pick.
Wow.
We had our pick of all of them. They're just out there.
All two of them in the greater Tampa area. We have our pick.
So you guys, you know, have been doing this for you know, you're getting close to two decades. You know, we're in the 20s, so you're 15 years basically. And my audience has to be completely sick of me asking this question to writers and to artists and to musicians. What is your guys' writing process? I'm always fascinated by how things come together. Is it somebody comes in with an idea and you guys jam on it? Does someone write the song from front to back and you just add the accompaniment to it? Is it jam it out and, hey, that riff sounded cool? What is your guys' writing process?
It's a little bit of all of that. Like sometimes somebody will come in with a song with a vision, like and go, like, this is what I want the song to be. Sometimes it's just an idea, just a little kernel, just a little tiny a riff or an idea or a horn line, and then we work it out together. Like there's some songs we've done that I don't even know how we finished it. Like it's so we have a song called My Teresa that I don't even remember how we put it
together. I'm glad you said My Teresa, because I was going to talk about My Teresa. We had Mike had a really cool chord progression, and I couldn't get it out of my head. And that night I was home by myself watching The Last Action Hero. and I don't know what it was about that movie, but I constructed, like I said, I had an idea for like a pre-chorus and a chorus, and I'm so excited. And we came back to the next practice, and between the five of us put that together.
Yeah.
Last Action Hero wrote that song.
Yeah. There's also times where like an idea will just, in one session, we'll just put together a whole song in like one shot. Like here's a chord progression, and by the end of the night, we got a song, and we've got, you know, a melody, not lyrics yet, but there's a melody there, there's a song there, and we're off and running. So it's everything. It's sometimes somebody comes in prepared, sometimes it's just a little bit and we jam it out. But so, it's very collaborative, which is what I like about
that's cool.
How we write. So, we all write together.
So Mike, with the vocals, I always like the writing part of this too. Are you a guy that has your lyrics, you write to the music, or do you pen lyrics to it, or like when you guys are jamming, are you just for better lack of term, like pooing out lyrics and matching them to the rhythm? Like what is your vocal style?
I will usually write, as we're putting a song together, I'll write completely ridiculous lyrics, just something that'll make the guys scratch laugh lyrics. Just scratch lyrics.
Right.
And then I'll just kind of make up nonsense, and then I'll go back when it's time to actually, you know, finish it. I'll actually sit down and write some lyrics. I keep a notebook, and I have like a lot of, you know, things I'm thinking about, or balls in the air, or like little notes. Yeah, little ideas that I want to write about. Yeah. And then when I try to fit it to what we're doing, like to whatever song we're working on, and I'll try to fit it into that. But no, it's from the get-go, I'm just making stuff up. I'm just trying to make these guys laugh while we're working on the song.
If those lyrics come so easy.
Yes.
Like, yeah. If we were a dirty comedy band, we could be churning. We could have like 5 albums a year.
Kind of like a Rodney Dangerfield album. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. No respect.
Yeah, with a little Last Action Hero at the end.
Yeah.
Golden Ticket or whatever that was.
Now, anytime I listen to like ska music, I think about like upbeat kind of tempo and everything, but even in the songs that you wrote, like you talk about alcohol and death, is it kind of hard to like get a message in there when there's like such a upbeat tempo to the music?
Absolutely, yeah. There's it's an upbeat, it's a happy sounding music, and then I tend to be a little morose, so it definitely, especially this last record we wrote, I think like 4 or 5 songs on it that are dealing with death or talking about
death. Yeah, because we're all old now.
Yeah, we're getting
old. Yeah. I'm not old yet.
Yeah,
I'm 28. Children.
But it was weird. After we were all done, and we kind of sat back and looked, because Jay wrote one, and I wrote 2 or 3 that were kind of all talking about like this morbid thing. But it's also. Or there's our song Sober is the same thing. It's kind of a sad song if you look at the lyrics, but song is a fun song to listen to. Like, so, yeah, it is kind of a weird, I think it's just my own morose. It's
dealing with reality.
Yeah, dealing with reality.
Yeah, but everyone has to deal with
it. Yeah.
It's fun melodies saying terrible things.
Yeah, we've avoided dealing with reality for a long time. That's why we interview. Yeah. That's why we interview other people. Yep. You know,
I've been there. Reality sucks most of the time.
Musically, you know, we're in an era where clearly album sales don't mean a lot now. I mean, if you have them, great, but a lot of your guys' money is obviously going to come from touring and getting out there and whatnot. And we're also in an era where, you know, you do have the ability to reach an individual fan, where you're able to, people are able to message you and get in touch with you and get as close to you basically as they, you know, is physically capable as far as music wise, know where you're coming from, get to know the band. And we're also in a era where there are festivals and a lot of things that are catered to a very specific style of music or maybe a following. That, where are you guys at as far as your touring schedule, as far as getting music out there? What is the driving force in the band? Like, are you guys one of those road dog bands that's out there 300 days a year? Are you out, or are you at home trying to connect with fans, trying to spread your music? What is the kind of mindset of the band, let's say, after you recorded this album? Where are we going?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think kind of like Jay was saying, we're all, you know, getting older. Well, except for Devin, who made it known that he's young. Yeah. But,
single, yeah,
but, yeah, I mean, we definitely don't get on the road as much as we used to.
Right.
You know, we're all, you know, all married, and some of us have kids, and, you know, so it's...
Losers!
We try to put together a tour whenever we can.
Right.
You know, and we've, you know, done several European tours and stuff, and mm-hmm. so it's, I think, I mean, we're always playing, you know, basically Southeast kind of stuff.
But right.
I think we're, when we put together a tour, it's always more, at this point, it's more of, what are we going to really enjoy doing, rather than, oh man, we got to hit the road, and we got to hit these cities, and we got to hit this,
right.
You know, to try to draw, you know, more fans in and get sell more you know, records. And it's more of what we like to do, what we enjoy. I mean, we kind of got past. Well, Jay's going to jump in here a second ago, but I think we kind of got past, you know, about 6, 7, 8 years ago, the reality hit of, you know what, the kind of music we play, we love it,
yeah,
but. We're in the smallest genre of music there is, basically.
Right.
So
right.
We're not gonna hit the lottery playing punk and ska music. So we do it because we enjoy it now, and you know,
might as well enjoy it.
Yeah, do the things that we like to do.
And at the same time, you can, as you mentioned, you can do a lot from your computer at home.
Right.
You know, there's this page that people keep tagging me on Facebook, and it's a guy wearing a Sasquatch costume out in the woods playing saxophone. And it's called Sax-Squatch. And he's got 120,000 likes on Facebook. And he's playing Careless Whisper out in the woods. And we're killing ourselves. playing ska punk, you know, just trying to, you know, get up to like what, 6,000 or
something. Yeah. Yeah,
it's not
that. Hey, Jay,
it's too late. Jay, I should have thought of Sasquatch.
Jay, are you Sasquatch?
I wish I were, kind of. But honestly, I mean, if you can do a lot from your house, you know, just putting content out there and getting the right people to see it. I mean,
yeah.
So it's, I don't know how much touring 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
I don't know how far that gets you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
And when you guys are on the road, are you the type when the show is over, you're all five of you are hanging out together, or are you just like, all right, we need a little space from each other?
No, we're all
socially awkward. We can't.
We're not comfortable until the five of us are back on the bus and no one else is around. And then we can cut loose and hang out and have a good time.
But how do you guys do that when Devin's so much younger than all you guys?
Yeah. That's true.
He just doesn't understand the stuff we talk about.
Earmuffs, Devin. Earmuffs.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was just saying, luckily we all get along very well.
Very
well.
Yeah.
That was the thing I was going back to originally, like when I first joined the band, how it didn't feel like, you know, like, it felt like we all clicked immediately. It was, like, I felt like these guys were my buddies the whole time, you know what I mean? Like, these feel like the guys that I would have hung out with if they were just my friends. But, like, we just happen to be in a band. We get to tour around and do really cool shit and play really cool shows. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
And you guys get to paint a room together, as I saw on your Instagram.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, we're sitting in all those fumes right now, sucking them in.
Yeah, turned out amazing.
So, all right, so let's jump into your fifth album. You guys got a new album coming out. You're obviously doing support for the album. You have, I believe, 12 songs on the track listing. The album's called Five. Give us a little insight to the new album. When did you record it? Where did you record it? Is there anything like a theme rolling through this, or what should an audience expect if they're old audience or they're just new people hearing you right now?
Well, the theme of it being called Five was that there's five of us. It was our fifth record, and it took us 5 years. we were putting stuff out every 2 years, you know, and sometimes we have a couple cover albums we put out that we kind of throw in between. And we did put a second cover album out in 2017, so it wasn't like we did nothing in between our last album. But it was a long. I don't want to say it was out of laziness. It was just there might have been a little laziness, but
two studio moves.
We moved studios once or twice, and now we've moved again. But I think it was. We always had something in mind when we set out to record, and this time it was just. You know, just like, hey, you know, there wasn't any set direction to record, so we just kind of took our time and went with whatever we came up with, and didn't specifically try to sit down and make a punk and ska album.
Right.
There's a lot of different flavors in this album. Yeah. I mean, it's still, you know, a punk and ska album, but it's definitely different from our past albums.
I feel like we really wrote songs we just wanted to write, in that sense, you know, and it was one of those things where I feel like, you know, 3 years after the last original album, we're like, oh, it's already been 3 years, might as well take our time and really write the songs on it, right? Suddenly it was 4 years, and then we're like, all right, here are the songs now. And yeah, we even cut one, which is, you know, we had to cut one of the songs because this, you know, it was just too much. But, you know, I think it's really good. I think it's a really good mix of everything.
Yeah, the album comes out the end of this month, and I literally recorded drums for it When it comes out, it'll be just like 2 months shy of 2 years ago that I
Whoa. Yeah. Really? Wow.
Yeah.
All right, is that hard as a drummer? Is that hard to be like, wow, I would have done something different or anything like that?
Well,
or?
As we got down near the end, I think you always have that as a musician.
You
put something out and 6 months later you're like, I wish I would have done this. But yeah, I mean, there's a few things I wish I would have done a little different.
Right.
But, you know, for the most part, I'm still pretty happy with it.
Nice.
So, good album.
Yeah.
So I always have this question. When I was growing up, I wanted to be in a ska band. I was a bass player and all that. And I always thought about, this is another question for the horn section guys. So I if the three of you got to go out to take a piss or get a drink, like Jason and Devin. So this would be the hardest part for me being in a ska band. Like I would totally vibe with the music and then play our part. The hardest part for me would be what the hell do you do when it's not your part, like the rest of the music's gone and there's that in-between time. That would kill me. It would kill me on stage. I think that's why I like doing stand-up, because there's no awkward moments where it's not me, like where I have to like kind of blend in. What do you guys do? What's your strategy?
It took me a couple years to figure out. So I got to make ska faces, and I'll turn my sax like a guitar, and I like do the upstrokes.
Wow,
and,
nice.
You
nice.
Know, I sing harmonies and
yeah,
stuff.
They also background vocals.
Yeah. Devin jumps around and tears his ACL.
Yeah, that's what I try to do.
He's
like,
so
not to tear the ACL part, but you know. Like, you try to be active, and, you know, like, I mean, because when you're playing music, you really enjoy it, you're having a great time, you know, play a little fake guitar and trumpet, you know,
read a book.
jump into the crowd. Devin jumps in the crowd.
I like to jump in the crowd and hurt myself.
Devin.
Have a lot of fun.
Devin one time hurt himself jumping back up onto the stage and fell down right next to the drums. And we just kept playing because we didn't know if he was faking.
Well, that's what I wanted him to do. That would be my worst nightmares. Everyone stops music, and it's just me on the ground in pain.
Yeah.
What a nightmare. Yeah. So, like, I
especially with the youngest guy blowing his ACL out. Nice.
Yeah. this is a weird trumpet solo, him screaming. Like Yoko Ono.
Their music's going in a direction I don't really know if I like.
Performance art.
That's awesome.
With all your touring that you guys done, what is like one place that like you love going to that people would be surprised about?
Poland, yes. For sure. We love Poland. Poland's amazing.
Turun?
And the other one,
Torin was great. The first year we went there, the whole town came out. Like, it was literally packed.
The mayor took us on a tour of the city.
Yes. and he had a wife or a girlfriend with him. We don't know, but she was taking pictures of us.
Very nice lady.
I don't think a lot of American music comes to Turin, Poland, and they literally everybody came out to see us.
Yeah.
And then we went back in 2015, and it wasn't as much of a welcome, but it was sort of like,
we remember you.
We played like over 90 minutes. We were supposed to play like, you know, an hour or something. We played over 90 minutes, and the promoter was like, can you guys keep, can you just
play more music?
Yeah. So we played everything that we prepared, and he's like, it doesn't matter, just start over. Started filling in when we started playing. So Turin has been very good to us.
Hard Rock Pub Camel.
Let me tell you something. If we don't get one download in Poland after this interview, and we're I'm deleting it.
It's worth it.
And the best part too, at the end of the night, because we had to take, because Poland's not on the euro, so we had to take Polish money.
Zlotsky.
But we had to take their money out, and so at the end of the day, we got all this. At the end of the night, we got all this money, and we were just like pool it all together, buy as much beer as we can to go, and we put that on the bus, and then we had got on the bus and had a
bunch of Polish beer.
It bought a lot of beer too, and some playing cards.
Wrote on my arm as we were leaving, "Come back to Turon."
Yeah,
man, he wrote with a Sharpie on my arm.
and it's still on there years later.
It's one of the best shows I've ever played. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fun watching people that can't speak English at all try to sing your songs. Yeah.
But they still know them.
Yeah, they somehow know it and sing it and get into it and go crazy and
love it.
It's, yeah, I mean, you just feed off of that.
Also, they recorded it from their soundboard that night, and I think it went platinum there. Yeah, we haven't seen a dime.
Platinum in Poland is only 25 copies.
Yeah. 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 You can see how many Slotskys you guys got rolling in monthly. Right. You know? Yeah. Guys, I want to first off, I want to thank all five of you for coming on the show here. You guys sound like most importantly out of everything, you guys sound like you're having fun doing what you guys are doing, which, you know, everything else really doesn't matter when it comes down to it. So I want to thank you guys for coming on. So if people want to go check out the band or follow the band, or the best place to check out their music or see your tour that's coming up or any information, what's the best place to interact with you guys?
Facebook and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just get on there, Facebook or Instagram, search Victims of Circumstance. We'll pop right up. Yeah, we're the there's several Victims of Circumstance and very...
Dome of Circumstance, and
they're trying to steal our thunder.
Yeah, we have to get the lawyers involved. You know, trying to steal all of our fame. Yeah,
it should be at VOC Scott.
Yeah,
at VOC Scott.
Hey, do you guys have a bass question? Because Lindsay really hasn't talked at all.
I've got this drink over here.
Yeah, he's just been drinking, and he's.
Oh, I could come up with a bass question here. Let's see. So I played bass for a long time. I know. It makes perfect sense. I went from bass to podcasting. Well, look at my life.
Natural progression.
You'll have a podcast one day, and you'll be like, I was a bass player. We've been really lucky to have two of my favorite bass players of all time on the podcast. So I will ask you as a bass player. So we had Victor Wooten on the podcast, who's like, I don't even know how to explain him. He's like a virtuoso on the bass. Like I watch him and it
the
makes
bass
me,
deity.
Yeah, it makes me want to just burn my bass in a chimney in the backyard. And we've had Stu Cook from Creedence Clearwater on the show.
Yeah, nice.
So if you had to talk to either one of them, which one would you choose first?
No, I'd take the CCR guy first. Just because, I mean, the incredibly impressive technical playing of guys like Victor Wooten or like Jocko, it's very impressive,
yes.
But it's never been my cup of tea,
right.
Per se. It's too much work. I mean, I'm a punk rock guy. So, like, I grew up listening to guys like Matt Freeman from Rancid or Chris Number 2 from Anti-Flag. That's more my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Don't let Lindsay fool you. He's the most talented musician.
Yeah. I was gonna say you can't throw Rancid as an example as boring and too much work because he's all over the goddamn place.
Yeah.
He's not tapping and playing strange harmonics.
That's true. Guys, I want to wish you the best of luck with the album, the tour, whatever you guys got going on. You guys were a lot of fun to have on the show, and we really enjoyed our time with you.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. Thank you.
All right, Berlew, the Victims of Circumstance.
You know, every time I hear their name, for some reason, I just imagine a PG-13 horror movie by that name. So you could just totally see some, like, whatever you do, don't play that board game, man. It changes things. And there's always like, you're crazy, man. And then the shot in the trailer of some guy's, Hopefully you won't fall to the victims of circumstances.
Just kills you with a saxophone or tuba. Yeah,
just something weird, like you'll pick up a card and it's like you nailed it, and then like they'll go outside and somebody's got a nail gun and accidentally shoots off in their face, something like that.
I feel like you're always creating movies in your head. Like
I'm creating all the time. I'm a 247 entertainment machine. What can I tell you?
That's definitely your new nickname.
Side note, I'm not always on. Don't go into certain episodes thinking you're going to be highly entertained.
Wow, this guy is great. The 247 entertainment machine himself? Let's go check out this episode. Oh, boy.
Ooh. Well, they must have started at another time.
He must have been working his way up to 24/7.
Was like the 5 to 9 entertainment shift, and they started recording around 3 o'clock.
Oh, God. All right, brother, what do you got?
Well, Scott, I mean, coming up this week is the Super Bowl.
No.
Yeah. This is a small time event. It's one of the biggest events of the year, and they say it's the biggest sick day of the year is the Monday after the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I've taken a few of those myself.
Yeah, I mean, I figure since we generally record on Monday, we should just start. So to make your life easier, let's just get some like phrases out there. So you can cut and paste them in there in case we have to, like, fill in an episode. So it doesn't look like we missed the Super Bowl.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So just hit record here. I'm going to just go through some lines here.
Okay. We're recording. Okay. We're rolling.
All right. Man, Mahomes looked awesome out there for the Chiefs.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
That sounded good.
That sounded pretty convincing.
All right. When it counted, Jimmy G was pure money.
Okay,
that's like in the bumper, you know, that could work out really
so we
well.
We could just, what you're saying is we could record these maybe and not even have to record next week. We can just put them in and take an off day.
Exactly. I mean, I got all occasions here. All right, let me try out some ones just in case of the weird stuff. You never know what happens in these games, Scott.
So we'll just give these clips to our engineer and he'll be able to just kind of play them through and form a conversation.
Absolutely. Or like they'll put it out on Twitter like during the game, like we're live streaming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. All right. And who gets the sack to win the game? The hologram of Derek Thomas.
Yeah.
That could happen.
I can see it. All right. Maybe during the halftime show for sure.
Yeah. I'm doing some banter with you right here. I know you don't like it, Scott, but the 49ers are right. There's no rule that says a dog can't play football.
I think that could happen right after the Puppy Bowl. Yeah.
The Air Bud, man. Come on. It could happen. That's why I'm planning for this stuff, just in case. We might be sick.
Okay.
Hey, Scott, has there been any word from the kidnappers on the ransom for LeSean McCoy?
A ransom for LeSean McCoy.
Well, I mean, you can't get the big stars, so you grab the third-string running back from the Chiefs.
Shady McCoy is the first to get kidnapped in your eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hmm. I can't believe Richard Sherman said, "Screw Disney, I'm going to SeaWorld."
Not bad.
Yeah, I mean, he might got a different endorsement.
He's controversial.
Yeah. It was kind of weird seeing Mr. Peanut come back as a zombie in that commercial.
Okay.
He's supposed to die off, but I'm thinking next level.
What's the whole deal with that? They're just getting rid of him? They're done with him?
For what I understand, there's a commercial where it's almost like an action movie, and supposedly in the end, Mr. Peanut dies, hence they're going with a new campaign after that.
Wow.
So
these are the things that concern people.
Absolutely. Hmm. Scott, I had a suspicion Terry Bradshaw had dementia when he drove that lawnmower onto the field.
Please let that happen. Please, yeah. Please let that be a real statement we're talking about next Monday.
It was boring until Vince McMahon led the XFL onto the field with crowbars and yelled, "Attack!"
Like an NWO takeover. I kind of like that.
Yeah. Third league is starting. It's like, you know what? We don't have competition. We take out our competition.
No, no, no,
is that Hollywood Hogan coming
on
the field?
Oh, my God. They got Garoppolo.
All right, this is my serious one, and I'll just make you're still recording this, right?
Yeah. I'm rolling.
Oh, okay. That was a really racist halftime show. Shakira is a monster.
All right, I got that. Okay. In the climate we're in, I'm sure someone will say she's racist about
something. Somebody. All right. Andy Reid looks way better naked than I thought.
I hope that happens also. I hope that happens shortly after Terry Bradshaw on the lawnmower. Okay.
The San Francisco wildfires are now out of control thanks to Antonio Brown.
Burning them to the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And probably the most likely one I would have to say on Monday, Scott, I only watched the Puppy Bowl 12 times, okay?
I mean, that's very realistic as far as you. I feel like you'll be watching that on replay.
Yeah, like people, I'll be like, what happened last night? I was on Hallmark Channel all day.
All right, well, we'll see. I'm sure one of those things we'll be able to play. I mean, unfortunately, it'd probably be like the Mahomes, man, he was nasty comment, but, you know. Hopefully we get a lawnmower. Prepared.
That's a key thing. So we can take off Monday. We're all good.
That's fine.
Just throw them all together in whatever order you want. I know it's going to happen.
All right. Well, that's good. I guess it's time to get out of here. I think it's time to run. But before we go, who you got in the Super Bowl?
I like KC. I think basically San Francisco is a carbon copy of Tennessee. And KC managed them well. I just see KC gonna throw up a bunch of points, and though I like Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think he's ready to go one-on-one with Mahomes in scoring points.
I agree. I like KC by a little. The only thing I think is KC can't go down like they've been the last 2 weeks. Like they can't play from behind. I think San Francisco's defense is going to give them a little bit of a harder look than most teams, so but I see Kansas City doing enough to win it by. They're going to win by four. That's Scott's hot prediction right there.
I'm going a little higher. I'm going to say the final score is going to be 31-19 Kansas City.
All right, 31-19. I'll get my four. I'm going to go 28-24 Kansas City. So we'll see. And I'm kind of rooting for KC, so part of that is I really like watching Mahomes. So
50 years without a bowl, I think they earned it.
Yeah, and I kind of want Andy Reid to win. So All right, guys, so enjoy the Super Bowl, have fun, take off on Monday, and listen to our back catalog while you're nursing your hangover. So, Berto, anything to promote before we get out?
I'm going to promote Ground and Pound Elite Fitness Center. It's a new workout area here in Villarica, Georgia. They have jiu-jitsu. They have strength and conditioning classes, kickboxing. All the trainers are super friendly but tough and help work you out. If you're thinking about working out for the first time, guess what? Your first visit's free. You don't have to worry about signing up. So check them out. They're in Villarica. It's called Ground and Pound Elite Fitness Center.
Gotcha. And I'm going to promote. So this weekend I worked for, I told you I did play-by-play for a hockey showcase. It was the NHPHL, which is kind of like 16U teams, 18U teams. But I'm going to promote the company that I worked for. They are called Hockey TV. If you're into hockey and you want to like check out, you want to see like junior hockey, you want to see some of the up and coming teams, these club teams, and the level of play was phenomenal. You know, these kids are 16, 18 years old, traveling all over the country, playing in tournaments and whatnot. It's a subscription-based service, but it's pretty cool because a lot of parents are able to like watch their kids play when they're somewhere else, and you can stream it right to your phones or your laptops or whatever. So go check out Hockey TV, and there's all different options there and broadcast options, so it's pretty cool. And awesome. That's it. And, guys, check us out on support some of the platforms that carry us. We're on all the podcast platforms. All the normal ones, iTunes, Stitcher, whatnot. But we are a couple other places support us, the BS Podcast Network. There's a lot of cool podcasts on there. They do a lot of tweeting for us, and they get our content out there. We are also part of Discovery County Network. We are also part of Denville Radio, and we're also part of ComingRightUp.org. So it's just a couple other places to see, you know, listen to other content, but also support us and, you know, listen to some things maybe while you're at work and whatnot. But that's it. That's it. Go check out some other episodes, guys. And the best thing you can do is leave us a review on iTunes, and that helps us out a lot. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back, and peace out. Skank it out, baby.
Rest in peace, Kobe.